across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Back here at 7:06 on this Wednesday morning, April 10th. Weather coming up in just a sec, and that'll be followed by my interview with retired D.C. police officer Michael Fanone, one of the many law enforcement officers attacked and beaten in that insurrection at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. We'll hear from him in just a minute. First, meteorologist Brittany Merlot joins us. Also, a good morning from Rob out in Tigerton. Says it's sunshine and 41. He's officially a National Weather Service spotter for a third year in a row after taking the storm spotter class. And he wants to say happy birthday to his friend Rachel, owner of Rachel's Roadside Bar and Grill in Wittenberg. So happy birthday, Rachel.
Happy birthday.
Brittany, things look really nice out there, but I believe we've got there's weather on the doorstep.
Right. There's always a price to pay. You can't get this nice. You can't have temperatures 20 degrees now above our average highs for this time of year. We're going to be soaring into the upper 60s to 70s today. Abundant sunshine up until about lunch. After lunch, some clouds are going to start to roll in. It's going to get overcast for tomorrow. And yes, rain is striking. We are looking at anywhere from a quarter of an inch to a half an inch from central Wisconsin all the way over to Lake Michigan as well. So a damp and dreary day tomorrow. But for today, bright, beautiful, and warm. Can't complain.
But then the long range looks especially warm.
Yes, the weekend. Oh my goodness, we could be hitting 80s by Sunday and into Monday. So spring is here, everybody. Have a smile on your face.
Can't wait for people to be like, it's too hot.
It's too hot. Oh, no.
Yep.
No.
Here we go.
Nobody gets to do that the first time around. All right, Brittany, thank you. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you. You too.
On Monday evening, when he first came into Wisconsin, I had a chance to talk with a retired D.C. police officer, Michael Fanone, who has testified before the January 6th committee about what happened that day when he and many other law enforcement officers were attacked at the Capitol. And he puts the blame squarely, you know, where it belongs, on violent rhetoric from former President Donald Trump. And the violent rhetoric, he says, that is encouraging other people to violence. So he's on a speaking tour, essentially telling people to take it down a notch. He's with the group Courage for America, and I asked him what it is about Courage for America that's helping organize appearances by him and other law enforcement officers around the country.
Yeah, so Courage for America is an organization that I got involved with shortly after January 6, 2021. It's an organization made up of average, everyday Americans who either professionally or in their personal lives, or in some cases both, were adversely affected by political violence and violent political rhetoric.
And what do you want to tell folks in Wisconsin and elsewhere? Do you have a target audience of people that you really want to hear your message?
Anyone who is either indifferent about the events that occurred at our nation's capital on January 6, 2021, or those who may have bought into some of the misinformation and disinformation surrounding the events at the Capitol. As you know, some of your listeners may not, I was a D.C. police officer. I was served in that capacity for two decades. And on January 6, 2021, myself and hundreds of my colleagues responded to calls for assistance from U.S. Capitol Police after their perimeters had been breached by a violent mob. As a result of my response, I was severely beaten. I was struck with a taser device numerous times. I suffered a heart attack and a traumatic brain injury. And there were more than 140 law enforcement officers that were injured that day, some severely, many resulting in the end of their careers. So I want to educate people as to what actually happened that day using my experience. I want to talk to local residents, community leaders, students, about the type of people that they send to represent them in Congress. You know, our organization is non-political, we're non-partisan, and we want to bring attention to individuals in Congress, people like Representative Derek Van Orden here from La Crosse, who actually participated in the attack on the Capitol on January 6, 2021. an attack that, like I said, resulted in the serious injury of hundreds of career law enforcement officers. And I want people to think long and hard about who it is that they're sending to Congress and what type of individuals are representing them. And is this the climate and the culture that we want for future generations in this country, individuals who feel free to use rhetoric that inspires their fellow Americans to commit acts of violence?
There are still elected officials among us, including the new Speaker of the House, including our senior Senator Ron Johnson, who still try to characterize the events of that day as, you know, tourists gone wild or something similarly moderate. We're not going to talk about them or what you would say to them, but to people who hear them, what do you think they need to hear from you to stop thinking that these are elected officials who can be trusted when they describe January 6th in that way?
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's just for many in Congress and in politics today, January 6th is politically inconvenient. I mean, the reality is that hundreds, thousands of Americans were inspired by lies about the results of the 2020 election. And those lies coming from, you know, elected leaders, people who are in positions of authority, inspired them to commit these acts of violence. And so, you know, what you have now is these leaders who continue to use the same rhetoric that inspired Americans to attack other Americans on January 6th, simply because it's politically advantageous and they want to remain in office.
Let's talk about a couple of those here in Wisconsin. We've talked at length about Congressman Van Orden's role on the Capitol grounds that day, but there were people who were in Congress at the time, including Congressman Tom Tiffany from up here in northern Wisconsin, and we've talked about Senator Ron Johnson previously. But when we talk about somebody like Congressman Tiffany, who has voted to overturn some of the state's election results from 2020, somebody who signed on to an amicus brief in a Texas lawsuit designed to invalidate the will of the voters of Wisconsin and other swing states, to know that those are elected officials who not only are still in office, but quite likely based on their district, have a more than fair chance of being reelected. Do you feel like there are still things you can say to their constituents that might give them pause between now and November?
I mean, I can only speak as a fellow American. I'm somebody who, prior to, I would say the 2016 election was what I would describe as apolitical. I supported candidates on both sides of the aisle. I voted for Donald Trump in 2016. And what I would say to them is that, those 140 some odd members of Congress who voted against certifying the 2020 election did so knowing that there was no evidence to support those claims. It was pure politics. And we've learned this now, or I've learned it since, you know, having listened to the select committee's investigation in Congress, a bipartisan group of members who spent quite a bit of time in investigating what led up to the attack on our Capitol on January 6th. And so the fact that these individuals lied to their constituents, lied to their fellow Americans, inspired their constituents to attack the Capitol, many of whom are now serving lengthy prison terms simply because they thought they were fulfilling their patriotic duty because they were told that the election had been stolen. Not by, you know, their buddy at the, you know, at their local bar, but by their elected representatives in Congress. Again, people who hold positions of authority, who at least, you know, should be seen as credible sources of information. And, you know, to me, those individuals are even more responsible for the action or the, you know, the violence on January 6th than the individuals who committed the acts themselves.
That's right. Police Officer Michael Fanone. We will have part two of my conversation with him in just a moment. I just wanted to take a moment again to underscore what we were just saying there, that people like Congressman Tom Tiffany and people like Congressman Scott Fitzgerald, who voted against certifying the correct vote totals from a couple of different states, and in Tiffany's case, signing on to that Texas lawsuit that sought to overturn the will of Wisconsin voters, that those un-American acts rendered them not deserving of a seat in Congress. They should have resigned with honor immediately. And they have not. And they have continued to spread doubts. They've continued to spread the big lie that Donald Trump is telling. Trump again, in the past couple of days, brought up the lie that he somehow won in Wisconsin. He did not. And his violent rhetoric is only making things worse. And we'll hear more from Officer Michael Fanone about that in just a moment. Wherever you're listening across Wisconsin, on this Wednesday morning, when you're here, you're up north, live from Lake Wasota on the Civic Media Radio Network. We are going to be visiting live with Congressman Mark Pocan in just about 15 minutes. But first, we're going to continue our conversation with retired D.C. Officer Michael Fanone, who's on a speaking tour, including stops in Wisconsin, about taking down a notch the political rhetoric, which is including far too much violent imagery and, frankly, casts fellow Americans as evil rather than people who can disagree on political matters. So I start this part of the interview with asking how he's coming to terms with how norms have been smashed in this country when it comes to today's political rhetoric. Let's look at this year then, this campaign with Donald Trump running again and having the support that he does, and what you would like to see in terms of the national discourse. Because it's one thing for, you know, Republicans to speak out against political violence once it's already happened, but we seem to have a whole lot of people in one political class that say, well, there's really no need to speak out preemptively about, you know, future violence. So what I want to ask you is there harm in having anything other than a zero tolerance policy on violent rhetoric in political speech this year?
I mean, that's how it should be every year. The fact that we even have to have this conversation is, you know, an unfortunate sign of the times. But, I mean, yes, it should be a zero tolerance policy. And it, I mean, for decades it was. You know, a lot of the behavior that we see, you know, carried out in Congress today, you know, 10 or 15 years ago would have gotten you censured and stripped of your committee assignments and most likely run out of Congress. You know, if not officially, you would have lost the support of your party and any financial backing, and simply would have been impossible to seek re-election. And now it's it's a valued commodity within it, you know, at least one of our major political parties. You know, it results in millions of dollars of fundraising, media attention, and
it just seems to be an accepted way of doing business now, of doing political business. We don't want to think that it's something that would be tolerated in a nice Midwestern state like Wisconsin, but there have been at least 11 men from Wisconsin charged, some convicted, and it could easily be argued that others on the Capitol grounds may have gotten away without being charged. But from what's happened over the past 3+ years, do you believe we're in a place where fewer people from Wisconsin would engage in some similar act against their government? Or are we in an age now where if these circumstances came together again, there might be more than 11 people from Wisconsin who would answer that call and engage potentially in some form of political violence?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, I think it's the latter. Despite some of the lengthy prison sentences handed down to individuals that attacked the Capitol, I don't believe that that will serve as a deterrent to everyone. And so I think that because of how divided we are at this point in the country, because of how we seemingly cannot trust individuals who may have a viewpoint that's different or differing from ours, and how we seem to have two completely different versions of the truth. I believe that, we will see more violence to come, regardless of the outcome of the upcoming presidential election.
So to take this to where we would want it to go, ideally, in 2024, there are a lot of people who are looking at the lay of the land here these days and may be tempted to unplug or stay unplugged if they've never voted before. Voting as an act of citizenship, what would you say to folks who would hear what you say and sound sympathetic, but say, I just don't know, so I'm not going to vote. Let whatever's going to happen, What would you tell somebody like that?
Well, I mean, ultimately, you know, if you care about democracy, if you care about freedom, if you're deeply patriotic like I am, then you have to recognize that, we, the people, the voters are ultimately the last line of defense. We can't look to these institutions like our criminal justice system to protect us from people who would exploit our democracy for their own personal gain and personal benefit. Accountability, at least in some part, is going to have to begin at the ballot box with free and fair elections.
Then to sum things up here, you have four daughters, I have two daughters, and we're both so focused on the kind of world we want to leave them. Is there a best case scenario in your head? Is there something that gives you signs of optimism that they will someday only have to look back on this as a terrible but temporary historical anomaly? Do you have reason for that kind of hope?
And I mean, in some ways I do, and in some ways I mean, this is the way I explain it to them. You know, I'm going to fight like hell to ensure that that they still live in a democracy, and they're going to have to do, you know, fulfill their obligation to ensure that it stays that way. But most likely, I think that they're going to, you know, their generation will face, you know, its own test as to, you know, the strength of our democracy. And they're going to have to, you know, to rise to the occasion, just like, you know, you and I are going to have to rise to the occasion right now.
Yeah, citizenship is no longer something to take for granted, in meaning our responsibilities as a citizen. Michael Fanone, his book is called Hold the Line, The Insurrection and One Cop's Battle for the America Soul. He is touring with Courage for America across Wisconsin and other states. And officer, we are very thankful that you chose to spend some time with us at Up North News Radio. Safe travels. Thank you so much for your service. Hope you have a good day.
Thank you, sir.
It really was, you know, a privilege to be able to talk to him because, again, sometimes, and Greg, you know this, the rhetoric gets to a point, it gets heated. Mm-hmm. We now use sports and or war analogies, you know, far too often. And as we saw on January 6th, there's a very human toll in that, that I'm glad somebody's reminding us to, you know, to really be more mindful of what we say.
Absolutely. I mean, especially doing the work we do here, it's easy in our bubble to read the information, to get fired up and heated. And then we have to remind ourselves that we're on the radio talking to people, and there are people out there who disagree with us, and we want them to hear the message, and getting fiery doesn't help.
Congressman Mark Pocan is next. You're up north. Maren Morris, one of today's birthdays. You can catch it in our history lesson every morning about 6:50. Whipping around on Up North News sites elsewhere on social media. On our Facebook page, you can find a post about how five Big Ten schools, of course including Wisconsin, have landed on Business Insider's list of the 25 most intense schools, places where academics and extracurriculars have equal focus. In our newsletter today, more about President Biden's 2025 budget priorities for working families as opposed to tax breaks for the wealthy. And on our website, my story about the race for Congress in the 8th Congressional District, where Republican Tony Weed got Donald Trump's endorsement before he even announced. And Trump also took a shot at one of the other Republicans running in the 8th District, and nobody ever thought that state Senate President Roger Roth would be referred to as a rhino, but that is the era that we live in these days. And we'll talk more about that now with Congressman Mark Pocan, who joins us this morning. Now, Congressman, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Pat. Well, thank you.
Let me, before we get to the 8th District race and everything else happening, I want to come back from the interview we just finished with Officer Fanone. Again, one of those who was badly beaten at the Capitol and is now speaking out about violent rhetoric. And it feels like the kind of thing that a lot of us have been talking about since 2015, when Trump was talking about, you know, throwing people out of his rallies and go ahead and hit them and everything else. And it's only gotten worse. And I feel like, on the one hand, it's kind of vindication for what we've been saying all along, but I'm sure you'd agree, we collectively still have a long ways to go.
A lot more to go. You know, the Trump era certainly did bring up more of this, but then, you know, some of these new people in Congress that have come in through the MAGA movement, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Lauren Boebert, Matt Gaetz, Chip Roy, and others, you know, are just really, that's what they're here for, is to do that. They think that somehow being popular in that movement and that kind of rhetoric is why they're in Congress, not to pass bills, not to pass laws, not to make people's lives better. And, you know, that's the problem. So then, you know, we hear it even back in our districts from some folks. And, you know, it's a tone that you're losing a lot of good people in Congress. Pat, I think I'm kind of crazy that I'm sticking around in this. A lot of people are like, why? Why would I put my family through this? Why would I do this? when, you know, especially this Congress, we've gotten, we never worked so hard to get so little done. And then to have that on top of it, you know, does make it a lot harder to attract, I think, the kind of people that we want to attract to Congress, people who really, you know, represent their communities and just want to do the best for their neighbors rather than, you know, be a national political figure.
I couldn't agree more. And it takes you from the federal level, which would include Mike Gallagher saying, that's it, I'm out, to State Senator Rob Coles, who, you know, I served with him in the legislature. I think you might have as well, because he goes back a ways. And again, one of those Republicans that you could have a conversation with, you could disagree on things and yet still find some kind of compromise and work together. But I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but I believe, what was it, 2 weeks ago or so, Senator Ron Johnson said something along the lines of, we're not here to pass bills. That just makes us Democratic light, or something like that. And I thought, wow, if that doesn't encapsulate where an entire political party is right now, I don't know what else could.
You know, people like that should, you know, work for activists, nonprofit organizations, if that's what they want to do, because it's not, you know, and I should say that because there's plenty of activists, nonprofit organizations that want to do good, but they shouldn't be in the elected halls of Congress. Our job is to get things done. Our job is to occasionally compromise. Our job is to get things, you know, before each other's bodies so that we can actually pass legislation. We're not doing it this session. You know, the full impact of Trump took a little while longer to move into Congress. But now even Appropriations Committee, where I was spoiled, we got things done all during the Trump years. This session, it all broke apart because Kevin McCarthy was so desperate to become speaker. He changed the rules and put a bunch of the extremists on the committee. And now we also don't function. So it is a tough era. And the same thing in Madison, as you well know, we're seeing it's got to turn around at some point. I really am a, you know, half glass full guy. I think when Donald Trump is out of the picture, I think we're in a much better place because there's no other national figure that has the same megaphone he does, because don't forget, he was an entertainer, Celebrity Apprentice. I think that really gave him, you know, a lot more than others who come into that position. But I am worried.
Rightly so. In terms of trying to get things done, I mean, we have been talking now for more than 6 months about an aid package to Israel, an aid package to Ukraine, perhaps help to Taiwan, perhaps something for the southern border and other worthy things. And yet it keeps getting caught up in these threats of government shutdowns, in Republicans rebelling against their own speaker, and of course the course of the war between Israel and Hamas in Gaza has certainly put the whole notion of aid package in a different light. Is there any way to give you that question as to where are we overall in moving some kind of aid packages to any of these particular hotspots?
Yeah, I think the one that I think most members of Congress, probably three quarters of Congress, would vote for would be the Ukraine package, if it were able to get to the floor. Because of the way they changed the rules on the Republican side, it's much harder to get to the floor. But we've got to figure out how to do that. I think there is at least half of the Republicans and virtually every single Democrat, including myself, would support that. I think the Israel funding is much more complicated. Benjamin Netanyahu, almost on a daily basis, is proving that his interests are not the U.S. interests. And we need a change of course, I think, from the United States in looking at that. We have to, I think, condition some of that aid. I want to still support Israel as a friendly nation. But Benjamin Netanyahu has been an irresponsible host of those funds and not using them well. So I think we have to put some conditions to protect innocent lives of kids in particular in Gaza and Israel for that matter. I mean, if this broadens, we get brought into it. And I think Netanyahu right now is just making a lot of assumptions. And then the humanitarian aid, for whatever reason, the Republicans don't believe in right now. And that's kind of crazy because that's something that I think is a hallmark of what the United States is about. So we may have to break these into some pieces to finally get it done, or at least have some assurances from the White House on conditions. But there's a movement on the ground in Wisconsin, Pat. I mean, I did four town halls and a couple other meetings in my district when I was home for 2 weeks. We're rarely, as you know, home for 2 weeks in a row. I was in my most rural parts of my district, not Madison. I think the closest I got was Mazomanie, Wisconsin, which is not, you know, exactly Madison. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the thing people wanted to talk about the most in these town halls was Ukraine and Gaza. And you know, Ukraine, they want to get it done. Gaza, they're really concerned about the direction.
Well, yes, and it bears stating again that you can be, you can want compassion and humanitarian aid for the Palestinian people, but not be pro-Hamas. And similarly in Israel, you can be disagreeable or downright disgusted with what the Netanyahu government is doing. That does not make you anti-Semitic or anti-Israel. And the fact of the matter is, that pivotal moment when Israel attacked those humanitarian workers with World Central Kitchen, that was a real pivot point for a lot of people in helping them understand that while they want to see humanitarian aid, they want to see, you know, minimize death, they do want to see the defeat of terrorism, but there's something terribly wrong when humanitarian workers are purposefully targeted, as it appears.
Yeah, over 200 aid workers have been killed, and that's part of the problem. We can't get food and water to people, not only because Israel won't let it through its borders, so we're dropping it from the air and sometimes killing people doing that and trying to bring it in from water, which is, again, ridiculous that we can't do it in a more safe and efficient way. But if the people who distribute it are also being killed and we can't get distributed, then you still have starvation. You know, the way I look at it, I've been to the region three times. You know, the people in Israel just don't want bombs raining on them from Gaza, from extremists. And there are extremists in Gaza. But at the same time, I think people in Palestine want to be treated with human rights and human dignity, and they're not. And, you know, we can have a two-state solution, which has been the longstanding U.S. position. And we should just double down on that, try to make something out of this bad be good. And that could be what maybe we should, you know, be really fighting for. But right now, the tide has absolutely turned in public opinion. And I think we need the White House to really hear that as closely as possible.
And so as you know, people look at what Congress might do with that aid package, and then again for Ukraine, which desperately needs it as well, it comes back to, you know, the still new House Speaker Mike Johnson and trying to get a read on him. He keeps saying kind of the right things, like we're going to get something done for Ukraine, but you're still not really seeing it in his actions. And I honestly can't tell how much of it to put on him for his leadership skills or lack thereof versus he wants to do something good, but the extreme members in his caucus won't let him. What kind of a read do you get on the speaker these days?
It's a combination. I mean, their caucus with the small margin is completely dysfunctional, and that's why we only do censure resolutions, impeachments, disapprovals of Biden, you know, things like that. We can't actually pass laws that we've been sent here to do. But also, Johnson is very inexperienced, and I've been told by Republicans that he's trying to please everyone in his caucus. And if you look at that caucus, you can't. I mean, you know, if you went to the Adams Family set, you know, Cousin It and Morticia and you know, Herman all might be a little different in trying to please. And that's what it's like with the Republican caucus right now. And he hasn't quite understood that yet.
So we look at what's there now, and we look at what might be there after November. And we've mentioned Congressman Gallagher is stepping down, and in the 8th CD, the 8th Congressional District, we know that obviously Kristen Lierley got in the race on the Democratic side late last week. There were a former state senator, Roger Roth, former state Senate president, and a current senator, Andre Jacques, already in the race when seemingly out of nowhere, out of left field, comes this former gas station owner, Tony Weed, and comes in immediately with the Trump endorsement. And so I just ask you, as an outsider looking at that district, is it in play for Democrats to pick up, especially if this primary becomes especially bruising? Or did Trump just make the primary almost a non-event and this Tony Weed guy is going to stroll right in? What's your prognostication on that?
Man, we got to see. I mean, I don't predict Republican primaries these days. It's difficult. We have an exceptionally strong candidate in the 8th district, but the numbers aren't as good as, say, the 3rd or the 1st, right? Democrat-Republican splits. But, you know, this is definitely an interesting curveball thrown in with Donald Trump getting involved before a candidate's even announced. Someone like Roger Roth, I agree with you. Someone just call him a rhino is like very interesting, certainly not by our standards. And, you know, Andre Jacques, the same lane that he's trying to have is where this new candidate's at. So who knows what will happen? I just know that, you know, I think we're going to have a very serious candidate coming to the first very, very soon. The third district has several folks that are vying for the primary against the most damaged member of our delegation, Derek Van Orden. You know, Wisconsin is going to be ground central with the U.S. Senate with Tammy Baldwin's seat. Obviously, the president has to win it, and we have new legislative maps. If you couldn't ask for more this November, you're certainly going to be having lots of abilities to, in a very positive way, influence government at the state and federal and local level.
And didn't you find it interesting that, again, President Biden was here in Wisconsin just 2 days ago, his 10th trip overall as president. And yet when Donald Trump finally came to Wisconsin, to Green Bay last week, it was on Election Day and quite possibly cost conservatives the majority because some of the Green Bay City Council members, you know, lost by a handful of votes. It just goes to show that, yeah, Wisconsin's going to get attention, but you got to give it good attention. It's got to be productive. And, if you feel like you're going to see that from the from the administration, from the national party and everything else, are they taking Wisconsin more seriously than maybe they did in cycles past?
Oh, absolutely. I remind them of the Hillary campaign over and over that she never showed up. And we all warned them. This time we're trying to make sure we're in their ear on a regular basis. But, you know, Joe Biden's come to Wisconsin so often. I was kidding that you guys, the governor, what the residency requirements are. He might owe some taxes, you know, for being here. But that's good. He needs to be here. But I think he also needs to hear maybe what some of us are hearing on the ground. And I do think a turn in policy on Gaza would be the single most important thing for him to do in the coming months to really lock down the state completely.
Yeah. And then there was the focus of his trip this week, which we won't have time to get into, but in a future visit, I want to talk to you about student loan debt and outreach to young voters, especially in your district there. We have much to cover on the third district in future visits as well. Congressman Mark Pocan, thank you so much for making some time for us. Hope you have a great day out there.
Yeah, thank you, Pat. Take care.
All right. When we come back, Todd Alba of the conveniently named Todd Alba Show joins us to tell us what to expect this afternoon. That's coming up next. You're up north. Welcome back to Trader and Trapper. 3-for-1 drink specials going on now. But first, get out on that dance floor and say hi to your DJ, Todd Alba, everybody.
Good morning, Wisconsin.
DJ Todd Father.
That's right. See, we never now have a Todd appearance without our friend Tony Zimmerman up in the Hayward area reminding us to respect the Todd Father. Also to remind us, the 7th Congressional District has a candidate in there, Kyle Kilborn, and that he, like others, are tired of this 24/7 election cycle where there's been no governing, which is precisely what Congressman Pocan was just talking about, Todd. There's no room for actual governing anymore. We certainly see that in Congress, and now we see it at the state legislature where Governor Evers yesterday had to call a special session of a committee just to try to get something done. And even then, I think, would you agree, Republicans are probably going to ignore this as well and keep all that PFAS cleanup money tied up, held hostage?
Yeah, they're not going anywhere. They're not coming back. I mean, I get what the governor is doing. You put people on record and you can run on that. But is it actually going to do anything? No. I mean, Republicans will ignore this like every other special legislative session that the governor has called, and it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate, but I do think it's a great stark reminder to people about which party in Wisconsin is serious about governing and which one isn't. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. But no, I would lay money that you will not see this committee come back into a special session, even if called by the governor.
Yeah, they're just it appears, again, just from the press releases yesterday from Republicans and Democrats on joint finance, that they are still far apart and that Republicans do not appear to be ready to budge in the way that they're looking to protect polluters, we're looking to protect industry, which, again, seems odd to me because the Republican Party I used to know was pro-business, but they were also pro-natural resources.
Yeah.
Now we're going way back for when that was the case, but it actually did exist that they say, okay, we support business, but not to the point where you're, you know, peeing in the lake. You know, we got to draw the line somewhere. And now they're like, no, dump away.
Well, you go, back all the way back to Governor Warren Knowles, but, go not quite so far back to Tommy Thompson when he worked with Democrats and Republicans to create both the lower Wisconsin Riverway and the Mississippi corridor as well, protecting natural resources there. I know Bob Jouk from Superior, great Democrat, was a very instrumental in the Mississippi River part of it, working with Republicans. So, yeah, I mean, it certainly happened in the past, but I think to Congressman Polkan's point, to listen to the interview, thought it was good. And, your point about U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, that Republicans just don't see themselves as legislators anymore. They simply see them there as extensions of Donald Trump. I tweeted earlier this week about Wisconsin State Senator Rob Coles of Green Bay, and obviously he's not going to seek for re-election. People forget Rob Coles. He started his career as a Democrat and, actually very concerned about the environment, very concerned about conservation, worked on a lot of great conservation bills over the course of his tenure. Have I always agreed with him? No, I can't think of a legislator, including those for which I worked, that I always agreed with. But I think it's a sad day in the state Senate, in the state legislature, to lose your longest serving member. All the institutional knowledge is gone. And also just one of, if not the last Republican who is willing to at least sit down and listen. We had Matt Rothschild yesterday, who is not a conservative Republican, call in and agree. And said, Rob Coles is one of the last people that we could actually have conversations with and work together. And losing him is a loss for Wisconsin.
Let's turn to something a little more positive, actually a lot more positive. And that is a very public on-air thank you to you, Todd Alba, for the trip that you and Trigvi did around the state last week, where the center point of it, the centering message of it, was what's great about Wisconsin, and not said in a sarcastic way. What's so great about Wisconsin? Like, no, seriously, what's great about Wisconsin? And listening to you and Trigvi Olson at the after hours event in your Eau Claire stop, and listening to you on your show throughout, was that thing that we needed most, and that is to set the disagreements aside for a moment and recenter ourselves. And why do we all love living, playing, working, and serving here?
Yeah, well, thanks, Pat, and thank you for being a large part of it, particularly in Eau Claire. You were on the show while we were at UW Eau Claire, and really of the 5 days, Richland Center, La Crosse, Eau Claire, Stevens Point, and Green Bay, I think the most feedback we got from listeners and viewers was our time in Eau Claire and Chancellor Jim Schmidt, and just being a positive cheerleader. I had friends who have kids getting ready to go to college, a couple of whom texted and said, wow, after listening to that Chancellor Schmidt guy in Eau Claire, we might send our kid there. And I think you're right, Pat. And I was actually talking to our former colleague, our friend, Kristen Bry, last night a little bit. And she said, so what'd you learn? I said, well, one of the big takeaways is people are really tired of just constant witching, griping to clean it up for radio. And they, you know him. I mean, and I know it's a little hokey. I know it's low-hanging fruit. People are yearning for somebody like Tommy Thompson. I don't care whether it's a Democrat or Republican that just says, you know what? Minnesota says they have 15,000 lakes. We have – or 10,000 lakes. We have 15,000, and ours have fish in them. You know, I mean, it's where – I mean, people want to be happy to be Wisconsinites. People – the bartenders, you know, we didn't sit there and talk about Trump or Biden. We talked about the Brewers. And I think that people are really yearning for politicians, leaders who don't totally ignore problems, but let's focus on the good things that bring us together and being happy that we're Wisconsinites. So thank you for being a large part of that.
I appreciate that. About Tommy Thompson, when he first got elected, when he defeated Tony Earle, he had a reputation. He was known as Dr. No, because he would say no to everything that Democrats put out there. He was seen as being particularly hard-headed that way. But here's a guy that got elected governor and then matured in his leadership, which we seem to – I feel like the opposite is happening today. That is, people rise in the ranks. They're getting more hard-headed. There's more money involved, obviously. The stakes are higher. And so we need those reminders now and then that there are people who grow into an office when they're there. So I appreciate you bringing that up.
Well, thank you. And let me just say quickly, because I heard you mention with Mark Buchanan, Kristen Wiley in the eighth. Trivi Olson is a guy who has worked on presidential campaigns like John McCain's and others. He knows Republican politics better than anybody else I know. He spent, you know, a half an hour with Dr. Wiley when we interviewed her in Green Bay. We got off the air and he looked at me and said, she could win. And that's not hyperbole. That's not just saying that because she was there. He was so impressed with her message. And there's somebody, Dr. Lyerly in Green Bay, who has a positive message, who is a great speaker, who's genuine. That's the kind of candidates we need to run this year.
Certainly do. Todd, thank you so much. Have a great show this afternoon.
Thank
Greg,
you, guys.
Thank you as well, Greg. Up North News is the Wisconsin digital outlet for Courier, a pro-democracy news network, building a more informed, engaged, and representative America. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Have a great day. See you tomorrow morning.